Welcome to the Legg Mason fourth quarter and fiscal 2016 year-end earnings call.
My name is John, and I will be your operator for today's teleconference. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. A brief question-and-answer session will follow the formal presentation. If anyone should require operator assistance during the teleconference, please press star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this teleconference is being recorded. It is now my pleasure to introduce your host, Alan Magleby, Head of Investor Relations and Corporate Communications. Thank you, Mr. Magleby. You may begin.
Thank you. On behalf of Legg Mason, I would like to welcome you to our conference call to discuss operating results for the fiscal 2016 fourth quarter and the fiscal year ended March 31st, 2016. This presentation may contain forward-looking statements within the meaning of the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995. These forward-looking statements are not statements of facts or guarantees of future performance and are subject to risks, uncertainties, and other factors that may cause actual results to differ materially from those discussed in the statements. For a discussion of these risks and uncertainties, please see risk factors in management's discussion and analysis of financial condition and results of operations in the company's annual report on Form 10-K for the fiscal year ended March 31st, 2015, and in the company's subsequent filings with the Securities and Exchange Commission. During the call today, we may also discuss non-GAAP financial measures. Reconciliations of the non-GAAP financial measures to the comparable GAAP financial measures can be found in the press release that we issued this morning, which is available in the Investor Relations section of our website. The company undertakes no obligation to update information contained in this presentation to reflect subsequently occurring events or circumstances. This morning's call will include remarks from Mr. Joe Sullivan, Legg Mason's Chairman and CEO, and Mr. Pete Nakwe, Legg Mason's CFO, who will discuss our financial results. In addition, following a review of the company's quarter, we will then open the call to Q&A. Now I would like to turn this call over to Mr. Joe Sullivan. Joe?
Thanks, Alan. Good morning, and welcome to our fiscal fourth quarter 2016 call. I'd like to begin by acknowledging that this past quarter was very challenging, both at an industry level and for Legg Mason. I want you all to know that we are not satisfied with these results, and we can do better. Yet we are taking action to ensure that we are further diversifying our business, and in light of a more challenging environment, carefully calibrating our costs. Our strategy is straightforward and focused. We intend to provide global investors with an increasing number of choices for investment strategies, products, vehicles, and distribution. By providing investors with more choice, we can become their firm of choice, and in the process, we should create greater long-term shareholder value. Now, let's discuss fourth quarter performance as well as some key highlights for the period on slide two. We announced a quarterly loss of 43 cents per share and closing assets under management of $670 billion. Net long-term outflows for the quarter were $13.2 billion, and net sales in global distribution were out $3.1 billion, the first negative net sales quarter in over 2 years. On a positive note, we successfully raised $700 million in public debt to fund our recent acquisitions, we restarted our share repurchase, and we declared a 10% increase in our dividend. Perhaps most importantly, we announced the acquisitions of Clarion Partners, a real estate investment management firm, and Trust Capital, an alternatives firm that we intend to merge with Permal, and we made a modest investment in Presidian Investments to help us expand investment vehicle options. And finally, we announced a new management equity plan with Royce to support their continued repositioning. Now, I think it would be worthwhile to discuss a few topics that I believe have been on investors' minds and offer some perspective. First, flows for the quarter. Make no mistake, our fourth quarter flows were very disappointing. In fact, the worst in over 3 years. These outflows reflected significant macro headwinds, specific near-term performance challenges at Brandywine and Clearbridge, and the residual effects of the performance challenges at Royce. That said, we're very pleased to see short-term performance improve significantly during the quarter, particularly at Brandywine and Royce. Now, we feel much better about flows in the current quarter, though you should expect it to be a lumpy quarter with a significant amount of big ins and outs along the way. Specifically, from what we see at this moment, we look to be about $4 billion out in April, split nearly evenly between equity and fixed income, and reflecting quite a bit of institutional reallocation activity. We are pleased, however, to see equity outflows at Royce and Clearbridge slow. On the other hand, we have roughly a similar amount, or approximately $4 billion, of institutional wins scheduled to fund in May, skewed towards fixed income. It's just a very lumpy period for flows. Second, is perceived complexity around the initiatives we've recently announced. We recognize that we threw a lot of information at you in January. The acquisitions are entirely consistent with our strategy, but they have resulted in a number of accounting charges and short-term complexity around our P&L. This noise should largely abate over the next two quarters, and while the accounting is a bit complex, the long-term strategy is not. More choice, more options for investors should make Legg Mason more valuable to shareholders. Third, is concern over the execution risk associated with these transactions. As an update, the Clarion Partners transaction closed on April 13th, and the Entrust Capital transaction should close as soon as next week. Now, there's no question that we're executing on a number of fronts, but as you have seen before, we do a very good job onboarding new affiliates, as evidenced by QS Investors, Martin Curry, and Rare Infrastructure. Each of these firms have been onboarded quickly, effectively, and on plan. Once on board, commercializing the appropriate strategies for the retail market is a long-term process, but this work has already begun. The last concern related to our ability to finance these transactions while continuing to return capital to shareholders. As I mentioned, we raised roughly $700 million from both existing and new bond investors in March, and we have finalized the terms on our bank loan, giving us a total blended cost of just over 4% on this $1.2 billion of new financing. We have started our buyback retroactive to February 1, and as we announced today, are raising our dividend by 10%. Slide 3 shows AUM by affiliate. Now, let's walk through them individually on slide 4. First up is Brandywine with $2.4 billion in outflows and $1.2 billion in unfunded wins. Relative fixed income performance in the quarter was strong, which had a positive impact on the one-year numbers, reversing some more recent near-term underperformance, and the 3- and 5-year fixed income performance numbers at Brandywine remain strong. Brandywine has been one of Legg Mason's strongest growth stories for the past 5 years, and even with recent challenges, we like how Brandywine is positioned. Next, Clearbridge with $2 billion in outflows for the quarter, which includes $600 million of closed-end fund leverage that was removed. A few points on Clearbridge. First, we're pleased with the improved investment performance during the quarter. Business feels a bit better as we're seeing recent outflows at Clearbridge slowing, a ramping new business pipeline, and $2.1 billion in unfunded wins. With competitive product sets in income, large cap growth, mid cap, ESG, and some international strategies among others, Clearbridge is far more diversified than generally perceived. We're seeing this fact played out in their unfunded wins. We like how the company is actively expanding distribution, both within the retail segment through the RIA and independent channels, and in a steadily growing presence in the institutional space. Next is Martin Currie with $100 million in outflows and $100 million in unfunded wins. Key points on Martin Currie are performance in the quarter was mixed, but generally more positive than not. The commercializing of their strategies in global distribution is underway. And finally, on the institutional side, Martin Currie has seen a modest uptick in both RFPs and finals in some of their stronger performing products. Now let's spend a minute on Permal in the context of its forthcoming combination with Entrust Capital. Permal ended the quarter with $600 million in outflows and $400 million in unfunded wins. Feedback from clients and consultants on this combination is broadly positive. The rationale for the combination, the importance of scale, the importance of a diversified lineup of investment strategies, and the importance of a broader, more global distribution network is well understood and appreciated. Upon closing, Entrust Permal will be a much larger company that invests with over 180 individual hedge fund managers on behalf of 730 institutional investors around the world, of which less than 30 were overlapping. This expanded coverage of managers across strategies and clients across channels and geographies is far larger than either firm could have achieved on its own. Overall, we're feeling quite good about the prospects for Entrust Permal. Next, QS investors with break-even flows and about $100 million in unfunded wins. QS remains in the sweet spot of demand and continues to be a major focus of growth for us. Clearly, our recent Smart Beta ETF launch is an example of that. Leveraging strategies with a long institutional track record, these products are well-positioned to deliver differentiated results in a crowded field, and we're thrilled with the product's initial performance through a very volatile market. We see significant opportunity ahead with QS across our global platform. Now, Rare Infrastructure with $400 million in outflows and $200 million in unfunded wins. The outflows, while disappointing, are the result of a reallocation from a large client that retains a significant mandate with Rare. We're pleased to have already added Rare's UCITS funds to Legg Mason's fund range in Europe and have seeded a 40 Act fund in the U.S., which we will soon begin to market. Feedback from clients on Rare's partnership with Legg Mason is very positive, and they have some promising institutional activity in the pipeline. Now let's talk about Royce, with $1.5 billion in outflows for the quarter, down nearly 50% from the previous quarter. A few points on Royce. It is still too early to predict a sustained turnaround for Royce. That said, things at the company are clearly more positive. With over 80% of Royce's mutual fund AUM in the top quartile year-to-date, better investment performance is now positively impacting the one-year and even some three-year numbers. And not surprisingly, net outflows have abated, with redemptions subsiding and subscriptions increasing modestly. To support future growth, Royce has refreshed its mutual fund lineup, opened all of its products, some of which have been closed, and engaged with institutional and quasi-institutional investors. We see Royce better positioned now to compete in retail and potentially the insurance sub-advised and international markets. The road to reestablishing prominence in the small cap space will be a bumpy one for Royce, but we believe the recently signed management equity plan is an important tool for them to build depth and long-term alignment. Now, Western Asset, with $5.8 billion in long-term outflows for the quarter, but at $6.1 billion, a strong book of unfunded wins and a strong pipeline. Consistent with both, Western continues to see bigger pools of fixed income assets in play and consolidation among clients. Performance at Western has rebounded strongly following the February 11th lows as spreads have snapped back meaningfully and the market has begun to price risk more thoughtfully. Western continues to see the potential for spread sectors to outperform as central banks remain generally accommodative and interest rates begin to rise slowly. If realized, this should be a constructive investment environment for Western. And finally, I'd like to give you a quick update on Clarion Partners. The transaction with Legg Mason has been favorably received by clients and consultants with no redemptions directly associated with the deal. Clarion's investment performance in the quarter was good, and market fundamentals remain strong. Assets under management closed at $41.3 billion, with positive net flows for the quarter approaching $500 million. The Clarion and Legg Mason teams have already commenced collaboration around distribution opportunities, and we enthusiastically welcome our new partners at Clarion. Slide 5 shows our results in global distribution, which had a tough quarter with net redemptions for the first time in over 2 years. This performance reflected a very poor macro environment, albeit one which began to improve in March. By way of perspective, outflows in U.S. long-term actively managed mutual funds were nearly $240 billion for the calendar year of 2015. At the same time, passive and ETFs had inflows in excess of $400 billion, clearly a very challenging period for traditional managers. Total net redemptions on our retail platform for the fiscal year were $1.4 billion, of which $1 billion is related to the removal of closed-end fund leverage and cap gains distributions that were not reinvested during the year. In other words, our retail platform was close to net sales flat for the fiscal year on gross sales of just over $70 billion during what was a very turbulent year. Against the backdrop of choppy markets and the significant headwinds that we faced with Royce, we are pleased with the overall flows with our other affiliates. Our U.S. retail sales showed positive signs, up 11% over the December quarter. The takeaway around our distribution platform is simply this. Our continued focus on diversifying our business by investment product and asset class, by channel, by geography, and with both our existing and new affiliates positions us to win over market cycles and over the long term. While the last quarter was challenging across all of our affiliates, sales for the fiscal year were net positive across 5 of our 7 affiliates. Our product lineup continues to evolve nicely with 34% of all products now next generation active, and we have continued to expand our market share in the retail, insurance, and RIA channels in the U.S. and internationally where we have seen gains in our cross-border fund range. Slide 6 shows investment performance. Our one-year numbers at quarter end were challenged, reflecting some underperformance in larger strategies, especially in January and February. The markets have settled a bit in March and April, and our performance is likewise recovering. Slide 7 is a nice slide to appreciate for a moment. We're always quite proud of the recognition that Legg Mason and our affiliates received during the year, some, though not all of which, you can see here on this slide. And with that, let me turn it over to Pete.
Thanks, Joe. Let's turn to slide 8. As Joe noted, we generated a GAAP loss of $45 million, or 43 cents per diluted share. This quarter, our GAAP EPS was impacted by a number of items, including $56 million related to tax rate annualization adjustments, in large part related to the fiscal Q3 impairment charge, acquisition and transition related costs of $49 million, a non-cash accounting charge of $21 million for the Royce Management Equity Plan, and a real estate lease reserve adjustment totaling $2 million. Lastly, we had a $7 million credit from a reduction in the fair value of the Martin Currie contingent consideration liability. Taken together, these items reduced earnings per share by 89 cents. Industry headwinds also impacted us this quarter as we experienced our second quarter of long-term outflows following six straight quarters of inflows. Our revenues decreased $40 million from fiscal Q3, primarily due to lower average AUM and revenue yields, as well as lower performance fees, which came in at $6 million, driven by Brandywine, Martin Currie, and Western. While impossible to predict with any precision, we estimate next quarter's performance fees will be less than $5 million. As for capital deployment, we restarted the buyback on March 22nd and retired almost 800,000 shares. Technically, we actually repurchased 1.4 million shares, but the other 600,000 did not settle during the quarter, so it cannot be counted as retired until fiscal Q1 of 2017. In total, we deployed $48 million of our $60 million target for the quarter post our acquisition-related blackout period. We plan to make up that $12 million difference in fiscal Q1 in addition to deploying our normal $90 million for the quarter. Moving to slide 9, this slide highlights the actual charges we incurred in fiscal Q4 related to Royce's management equity plan and the acquisition and transition-related costs for the quarter, as well as our expectations for fiscal Q1 and the remainder of fiscal 2017. As I mentioned, for the quarter, the Royce MEP charge was $21 million, and the acquisition and transition-related expenses were $49 million. In fiscal Q1, we are anticipating deal-related expenses of between $43 to $55 million, with an additional $17 to $27 million during the final three quarters of fiscal 17. And as you can see for Entrust Pramal, we are expecting total charges through the end of fiscal 17 of up to $95 million. There will still be a bit more coming in fiscal 18 for some longer-term retention packages, but we still expect to come in around the total of $100 million. Slide 10 provides an estimate of the fiscal year 17 P&L impacts from Entrust and Clarion. We closed the Clarion deal earlier this month, so we will have 2.5 months of their results in our fiscal Q1 financials. And we are expecting to close the Entrust deal as early as next week, so we could have up to 2 months of their results also in fiscal Q1. As I've indicated, we are expecting GAAP accretion for fiscal 17 of between 10 cents and 20 cents from these two deals, excluding the related charges. The 10 to 20 cents reflects the first partial year of Entrust Pramal savings in fiscal 17, along with intangible amortization charges, as well as higher interest expense from the debt raised to fund the recent acquisitions. Starting in fiscal Q1, 18% of the bottom line at Clarion and 35% of Entrust Pramal's bottom line, which represent the equity interest retained by management, will appear in our financials under non-controlling interests. To help all of you from a modeling perspective, I want to provide an expected range for these minority interests relating to Clarion and Entrust. For the full year, that range is forecasted to be $40 to $50 million. On slide 11, the main item to highlight here is our GAAP effective tax rate for the quarter, which was distorted by the $56 million of tax annualization impacts mentioned earlier. On slide 12, I wanted to highlight the projected GAAP and cash tax rates for fiscal 17, as well as updating the total projected tax benefit to reflect the increase in purchase goodwill and intangibles resulting from the Clarion and Entrust acquisitions. Our actual cash tax rate continues to run at a substantially lower level than our historical GAAP effective tax rate. In addition, we project our GAAP rate to drop to approximately 32% for fiscal 17 as a result of excluding taxes attributable to our minority interests. Our cash tax rate is projected to be approximately 6%, and we currently anticipate this cash rate staying below 10% at least through the end of this decade. And finally, our tax shield increases to $3.6 billion following the Clarion and Entrust closings, and with the corresponding tax savings increasing to $1.4 billion. On slide 13, our ending assets under management were basically flat, despite $17 billion of total outflows. These outflows were largely offset by a combination of market appreciation and foreign currency movements, which had a combined positive impact of $15 billion. However, our average AUM declined $21 billion from the prior quarter, including a $12 billion drop in average long-term AUM. Slide 14 focuses on flows. Fixed income outflows were $8.2 billion and were across a number of products, including some very low-fee mandates, despite overall strong longer-term performance. Equity outflows totaled $5 billion and reflected broad industry trends across active equity products. As shown on slide 15, our total operating revenue yield, ex performance fees, declined from last quarter, primarily driven by an $11 billion or 6% decline in higher fee equity AUM. Operating expenses on slide 16 were inflated in fiscal Q3, principally due to the intangible impairment charge of $371 million. Excluding the impairment impact, operating expenses were up 11%, primarily due to transaction-related costs. Comp and benefits were higher, which I will discuss on the next slide, but looking at the other line items, D&S expense decreased, reflecting the drop in mutual fund AUM, and other expenses increased, reflecting $26 million in contingent consideration credits last quarter, while this quarter's expenses included $17 million of acquisition and transition-related costs, partially offset by a $7 million contingent consideration credit. Turning to slide 17, comp and benefits were up $42 million, but excluding transition-related costs, Royce MEP charges, and mark-to-market on deferred comp and seed, they were down 4% from fiscal Q3. The primary driver of this 4% decline was lower compensation at certain revenue share affiliates due to a lower top line, which more than offset increased seasonal comp and benefit costs. The compensation and benefits ratio came in at 54%, in line with our target for the quarter. For next quarter, we expect the comp ratio to drop back down slightly to again be between 53 to 54%. For the full year, we expect fiscal 17's comp ratio to decline into the range of 51 to 53%. This reflects the forecasted impacts of the minority interest from our newest affiliates and the Royce MEP. Slide 18 shows our operating margin as adjusted, which decreased from last quarter's 20.6% due to the Royce MEP charge, acquisition and transition-related costs, and real estate lease adjustments, which combined to reduce the quarter's margin by nearly 15 points. Slide 19 is a roll forward from fiscal Q3's GAAP loss of $1.31 to this quarter's loss of 43 cents per share. Fiscal Q3 included a non-cash intangible impairment charge, adjustments to contingent consideration of real estate lease reserves, a gain on an Aussie dollar hedge related to the rare transaction, and various tax adjustments, which taken together decreased earnings by $1.90. For our fiscal fourth quarter, lower operating income decreased earnings per share by 10 cents, while the change in mark-to-market on our seed and corporate investments not offsetting comp and higher interest expense decreased earnings per share by 3 cents quarter over quarter. Finally, for fiscal Q4, the combination of items noted on the slide reduced earnings per share by 89 cents. Slide 20 highlights our quarterly cash position as well as our balanced approach to capital deployment. In the upper left, you can see that we have steadily reduced our share count by 34% since March 2010. In the upper right, we've highlighted our quarterly dividend progression over the same time frame. We now have had 7 straight years of increased annual dividends, and we're particularly pleased with the magnitude of those increases since 2010, up by a factor of 6x. In total, we have returned $2.6 billion in capital to our shareholders since we began our buyback program in 2010, a rate of capital return that is an industry leader. On the bottom left, you can see our cash position, which excludes the $700 million in cash, which we raised during the quarter to help pay for our acquisitions. Finally, on the bottom right, you can see the mix of our $369 million in seeded investments for future growth. So thank you for your time and for joining us this morning. Now I'll turn it back to Joe.
Thanks, Pete. 3 years ago, as I was appointed permanent CEO, we engaged our board in strategic discussions regarding the need for us to diversify our investment capabilities and revenue streams in order to be more relevant for clients, leverage our global distribution platform, and in the process, mitigate earnings volatility over market cycles. We identified key product gaps in what are projected to be the highest asset and revenue growth areas. And we embarked on an aggressive strategic M&A agenda and added a multi-asset class solutions capability with QS Investors, an international equity capability with Martin Currie, a liquid alternatives expertise with Rare Infrastructure, a leading real estate investment firm in Clarion Partners, and finally, added greater scale and broader investment capability in the hedge fund alternatives category with the merger of Entrust Capital with Permal. We also made a strategic investment in a product innovation capability in Precidian Investments, which we expect to enhance our ability to create more diverse investment vehicle choices for investors, particularly in ETFs. We also made a modest investment in iVest to expand access to retirement products to employees of small businesses. We see significant structural changes in the way investment products will be delivered to consumers that represent an opportunity for Legg Mason to win. The recent DOL fiduciary standard forces change in the way our distribution partners handle retirement-related business for their clients, and it may portend forthcoming changes in their non-retirement business. Consequently, this mandate has forced our partners to think differently about how they do business, which obviously has implications for us. In fact, we need to think about and be prepared to execute retail distribution differently. The DOL fiduciary standard also accelerates the move by investors towards different products and vehicles, especially ETFs, SMAs, CITs, and other vehicles. And while our ETF initiative is only recently underway, we are already well established and well-positioned in such categories. The changes resulting from the DOL are simply another catalyst that support our strategy to provide investors with more choice by diversifying their access to our products and vehicles. To that end, we are actively looking at alternatives to enter the digital space and provide our partners with technology-enabled advice. This is another key part of our strategy to increase choice, where we'll have more to report in forthcoming quarters. Now, I'd like to spend just a minute on our new shareholder, the Shanda Group. They are long-term strategic investors that have had a strong interest in making an investment in our industry. We had the opportunity to spend a fair amount of time with Shanda before they purchased the stake from Trian, and we believe that we are aligned with them philosophically. We expect that they can be very helpful in advising us on our strategy in China and with other various technology initiatives, both critical growth areas for us. As major shareholders for several years, Trian was a constructive partner. I appreciate their help, and especially the service of Nelson Peltz on our board. In closing, I want to reiterate that our long-term strategy must often be navigated through short-term market turbulence. It is important to look to the future and see how the moves that we're making today position Legg Mason for long-term success. So I'd like to end my comments by sharing a quote that really captures our vision. It is very hard to improve the value of a company for shareholders without first improving the value of the company to its clients. This is more than our explicit intention. Indeed, it is our express commitment to improve the value of Legg Mason for our shareholders by first continuing to improve the value of the company to our clients. And we will continue to pursue this commitment without exception. Thank you, and I look forward to taking your questions.
Thank you, and we will now begin the question and answer session. In order to allow everyone the opportunity to ask questions, we ask that you please limit yourself to one question and one follow-up. If you have a question, please press star then one on your touch-tone phone. If you wish to be removed from the queue, please press the pound sign or the hash key. If you're using a speakerphone, you may need to pick up the handset first before pressing the numbers. One moment, please, while we poll for questions. And our first question is from Chris Harris from Wells Fargo.
Hey, thanks, guys. Question on the outflows this quarter. Understand some of these, but the high level we saw at Western was a little bit surprising to us. And, I get that short-term performance is a little choppy, but typically I wouldn't think institutional investors would make decisions based on that. So can you talk a little bit about some of the flow challenges at Western this quarter, maybe what kind of was driving that? And then the flows you outlined in April, the fixed income outflows, how much of that is attributable to Western, if any? Thanks, guys.
Chris, thank you. What I'd like to say, I guess, about Western and about the outflows last quarter is that there's nothing really that we pinpoint related to them. So specifically, it's really around rebalancing and reallocation. In some cases, maybe a little bit of performance, but actually, interestingly, what we're seeing is about $3.8 billion of the outflows at Western were low single-digit fees. It's a little bit of Fed repositioning. I mean, there's really nothing that we can pinpoint, and we've gone through this pretty granularly with Western, that would suggest that there's any particular issue. Interestingly, with Western, there's also a significant amount of pipeline there, right, or unfunded wins, about $6 billion in unfunded wins. In April, as part of the outflows, we actually saw close to about $1.5 billion to $2 billion outflow related to performance, but the interesting thing, it was actually positive performance where the client was actually taking profits and looking to reallocate to a different strategy. So we see a lot of ins and outs, but nothing in particular related to Western that you can pinpoint as an issue or a problem, just a lot of lumpiness and reallocations and rebalancing. Chris, anything else?
And we'll go to the next question. It's from Craig Siegenthaler from Credit Suisse.
Thanks. Good morning. First, just a quick comment. I share my view again with Alan this morning, but I think a non-GAAP income statement would be really helpful here just to do the high level of adjustments today. And, several of your peers do this. But just jumping in my first question, what drove the $2 billion of fixed income outflows in April? And also, what products are included in the $4 billion of fixed income fundings planned for May?
Okay, so look, let me take a minute because I think obviously flows are going to be on everybody's mind. And let me offer a little perspective, Craig, and to the rest of you, a little bit more insight on three levels about flows. So as we have talked about last quarter, again, a very bad macro backdrop, and we had disappointing flows. There's no way to sugarcoat it. We were very disappointed. In the kind of environment that we saw last quarter, clients tend to move out and move around quite a bit, and we obviously experienced that. But as we see now for April, we expect to be out roughly $4 billion, split pretty evenly between fixed income and equity. And so let me decompose that a bit for you. We're actually feeling much better about our day-to-day retail business. On the equity side, the outflows at ClearBridge and Royce have slowed yet again. And the last I saw in fixed income, we're in about $600 million or so in our retail book. Our outflows for the month, for April, relate primarily to really very lumpy institutional month. We did see about $1 billion out at Permal, which is, I would say, not altogether unexpected in what is a very challenging market for hedge funds. And while those outflows are not attributed specifically to the Entrust transaction, uneven performance combined with a deal can be a bit of an outflow catalyst. On the fixed income side, again, as I mentioned on the question with Chris, we're not really seeing anything in particular related to the outflows. I would say it's really a potpourri of reallocations, rebalancing. I think there's been some anticipatory Fed repositioning and some performance, again, both positive and a bit negative. As I said, of the $2 billion out in April, I think it was $1.9 billion was attributed to profit-taking and repositioning, ultimately, by a client who continues to have many multiples of that outflow remaining with us. So a lot of puts and takes. Our unfunded pipeline as of today remains north of $10 billion, which I guess leads me to share with you a little bit how we look forward in terms of our flows. We think about this institutional business in four ways. First, our book of unfunded wins, which we share on a regular basis. And we categorize unfunded wins as meaning we have a signed contract for the mandate. The historical realization of those unfunded wins is very high, which is why we're comfortable in sharing them with you. Our pipeline of business, which means that we've gotten a verbal on a mandate win, but do not yet have a signed contract, that the realization of the pipeline is generally high, but it's also very client-dependent. And that's why we typically don't discuss it, and frankly, we don't plan to on a regular basis. Today, I thought what I would do, though, is give you just a bit of a glimpse into that pipeline, and in particular for Western, because there's been a lot of questions about them. As I said, specifically for Western, their unfunded book of business, meaning signed contracts, is $6.1 billion. Their pipeline across strategies, meaning verbal wins but not yet a signed contract, is approximately $8 billion. They're good, they're known clients, they're good and known clients, but we don't yet have a contract signed, which is why we don't talk about it. I think the other thing that we need to think about and anticipate a little bit is with the addition of Clarion and Entrust, we need to take into account a bit for the dry powder each of those firms have. This is a bit of a new element to our broader business and should be thought of as committed but unbilled capital. It is really capital that is available to be employed at the discretion of Clarion or Entrust as they find suitable investments for their clients. And then finally, you know, we watch the activity, and this is something you all know, but we watch the activity of our affiliates in RFPs and presentations and finals. Obviously, very much of a moving target where more is better. But overall, looking forward, we're pleased with our fixed income book of unfunded wins and pipeline. We're thrilled with ClearBridge's $2 billion in unfunded wins, which is among the highest levels we've seen. We love the dry powder at Clarion Partners and Entrust. And we continue to be pleased with the overall level of unfunded wins, RFP, and finals activity across the platform. So hopefully that kind of covers it a little bit for you. We feel good about the look forward. It's going to be a bit out in April. A lot of it's coming back in May.
Joe, can I just re-ask it a different way?
Sure.
So what products are in the four, though? I just wanted to understand in the month of May, what products are driving the uptick in demand there?
It's largely just global credit strategies at Western predominantly. They've got a number of different global corporate and credit strategies, some of their core plus products. It's nothing particularly new. It's across the patch a little bit. There's some TIPS products, I think, but largely global credit and core plus.
Got it. Thank you.
And Craig, this Pete, just real quick on your point on the non-GAAP measures, and you know, we are, as we've talked about, talked a bit about it at Investor Day, we're taking a hard look at how we help you guys understand the business, kind of the way we look at it, and we will likely be coming out with something that gets at just parent level numbers, and then something more economic net income like, so something, you know, that really helps you guys understand cash generation power of the business. But by the same token, we're trying to be very thoughtful. I'm sure all of you followed the recent SEC comments around non-GAAP measures and just making sure that whatever we do put out there is going to pass muster, because they're clearly using a higher bar on what companies disclose. So more to follow on that.
Thanks, Pete.
Our next question is from Bill Katz from Citigroup.
Okay, thanks so much. A question on capital management. Just a very impressive reduction in your share count, and I appreciate that you have a
a greater tax shield on a go-forward basis. Are you running into any practical issues of repurchase, just given the fact that your share count is now down to 107 million and just given your shareholder base as it stands today? And if so, how else are you thinking about use of capital here?
Thanks, Bill. No, not running into any constraints at all, actually. I mean, there's a rule, 10b-18, that governs how much we can buy in a day, and we're well under that. Our average volume has been running well in excess of a million shares a day. So, you know, we're not running into any real practical constraints there. But, and as we look forward, we're just going to continue to be thoughtful. As we said, you know, at some point we'll want to slow the buyback down. We think the stock's more fully valued. We're a long way from that. And we also want to be mindful of yield-oriented investors. We've got a lot of those. And they tend to be longer-term, more stable investors. So over time, you can probably see us pivoting towards returning more capital through a regular dividend, but that's a good ways down the road, and we're not running into any constraints on the buyback at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then just one on the flows. I'm sort of curious with Entrust and Pramal. You highlighted $1 billion may or may not be related to the transaction. If I got it right, you said it's about about 30 clients where they overlap. So I guess there could be some attrition there. Could you size what those assets might be relative to the overall combined asset base?
I might take a stab, and Joe can jump in. But, you know, total number of clients is over 700. So if they've got 30 that are overlapping, I don't know the exact number in terms of but none of them jump out in my mind as being overweight. So you can kind of look at it, it's what, 5%, less than 5% of the clients overlap. So you probably would say less than 5% of the AUM. But it's also, they do very different things. So there's not, I think, a big overlap in terms of the strategies, the way they each invest.
Yeah, and I think, Bill, you know, the point there is really the combination has brought together the ability to cover significantly more managers, hedge fund managers, and significantly more clients. I think just, you know, the number was something like 730 combined clients, but less than 30 of those were overlapping, and there's really no significant concentration among them. So, and then with respect to the billion out, you know, look, I think there was one larger, you know, piece there, and, you know, I think it was probably more performance related than anything else. But as I said in my prepared remarks, you know, anytime you do a transaction, it can be a catalyst for people to kind of to move. It's been a challenging period for hedge funds, and not just at Pramal, but across the patch. And so something like this, you know, is not to be unexpected. But we haven't heard anything that's really directly attributable to the transaction, either really at Entrust or at Clarion.
Okay, thanks for taking my questions.
Sure, thanks, Bill.
Our next question is from Robert Lee from KBW.
Great, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm just kind of curious. The first question is, you know, I mean, you did have a pretty big drop in non-U.S. gross sales and global distribution. Can you maybe talk a little bit about kind of where that came from, you know, what you may think, you know, was going on there, besides obviously the turmoil in the markets? Is there any specific products that kind of fell away more than others?
Yes, Rob, we had a very significant win in our international business in the previous quarter that didn't occur again. So, I mean, you're seeing a larger drop. The quarter, you know, the kind of ongoing day-to-day business was off, you know, consistent with the macro, but not to the magnitude that you're seeing. That was a very significant mandate that was won, you know, in the previous quarter.
Okay, great. And maybe going to Entrust a bit. I mean, I guess that's going to close in the coming weeks. Can you maybe just update us on kind of how their business has been performing since the Investor Day, given you know some of the challenges that the hedge fund community has faced and whatnot? And maybe as part of that, you did touch on dry powder, which I do think is helpful, but I don't know if there's a way of kind of sizing what that is between the two organizations.
Sure. So first of all, I would say that for both Entrust and Clarion, we were really encouraged by the fact that both had inflows, were net inflow in the quarter. Clarion to the tune of about $500 million, Entrust to the tune of about $300 million. I think that as it relates to Entrust and Entrust Permal in particular, we're pretty excited about some of the products that they're rolling out. They're in the market right now with some very, very interesting products. Again, not in the classic space of of hedge fund fund-to-fund type products, but more discrete thematic type products that are being well received. Now it's too early to get into details about it, but we're excited. And the good thing about that is, as we're going out and as the teams at Permal and Entrust are going out talking about the transaction, they're also being able to go out and talk about a specific opportunity, investment opportunity that's new and unique and distinctive in the marketplace and that's being well received. So we feel pretty good about it. Again, the traditional hedge fund space is challenged everywhere and certainly in the fund-to-fund space, but there are other products and opportunities, and we think there's some good things on the horizon there.
And Rob, this Pete, so in terms of sizing it for Entrust, the current number we got from them literally this week is around $1.6 billion. And again, important to think of it, again, it's dry powder, as Joe indicated, committed but uncalled, but we actually kind of use a slightly different term of committed but unbilled. So it's not like private equity where you're getting a fee on it before you deploy it. So it's out there when they find opportunities, when we call it, get it deployed, then we start earning fees on it.
And that's the same for Clarion, where we have about $2 billion, right?
Correct, yep.
So about in total, Rob and listeners, about $3.5 billion of this, unbilled, committed but unbilled capital.
And our next question is from Dan Fannin from Jefferies.
Thanks. Good morning. Appreciate the additional color on Western. I guess looking at the flow breakdown by affiliate, could you give us additional color on Brandywine, because they're obviously seeing a pickup in redemptions as well. So any additional color there would be helpful.
They had some outflow basically, and kind of across the patch during the quarter. Global Sovereign. Global income about 50-50 there. They had a little bit in equities as well. Global Opportunistic was out a bit. There wasn't a one strategy. They did have, they had some performance challenges in the last calendar quarter of 15 and bleeding into the beginning of this past quarter a little bit, but that's really reversed and their performance has improved in here. So, but there's nothing of note, nothing in particular, not any single product that's in particular outflowing. They just, they've been a really fast grower, and I think they had some people taking some chips off the table in the last quarter of 2015 and then the first quarter, calendar quarter of 16.
Got it. Okay, and then just as a follow-up, broadly performance fees, I know that, as you say every quarter, very difficult to predict, but we're tracking roughly down 50% this year versus last year. You're adding in now Entrust, to the mix next year. Is there anything, as we think about the outlook for this, in terms of where gross sales are happening, where your performance fee eligible AUM sits, to think about that as a potential area of growth over time, or I guess a way to think about that more at a higher level, number of AUM today versus, previously of what's actually eligible to earn performance fees?
Yeah, great questions, Dan, because obviously performance fees are going to be a more important part of our story going forward with Entrust in the short term. And then longer term, Clarion, right now we did not buy performance fees, you may recall from Investor Day. Anything performance fees on any AUM that's in the ground today will still accrue to management. So we think over the next 3 to 5 years is when we'll really start ramping on Clarion, and that'll be more significant. If you look at our legacy business, that definitely down just due to the overall performance of the markets in the fourth calendar quarter of last year. And we have a lot of stuff that kind of, December is usually a high water mark, but we do get performance fees throughout the year. Typically, they run $20 million a quarter, but June being the lowest quarter. But it all depends on which, again, what we have in the way of annual locks or quarterly locks along the way. What Entrust will add, virtually all of theirs are annual locks, and they're in December, so wouldn't really expect to start seeing anything there until our third fiscal quarter in fiscal 17. But you know, the, again, it all depends on they've got hurdle rate driven kind of performance fees, and when when they're doing well, they'll be in the tens of millions. But they could also have dry holes in a given year, depending on what the overall markets allow them to do. So I think again, next couple quarters are going to be light as we kind of retain or reacquire high water marks, particularly at Permal. And then I think the fiscal Qs 3 and 4, we're starting to think about getting back to more normal levels, with December being a more heightened quarter each year going forward, just due to when Entrust fees will lock. That get at it, Dan?
And our next question is from Mac Sykes from Gabelli.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mac.
Joe, we obviously know the firm's a large cash generator, and you certainly return a significant amount of capital. And then there's obviously some secular forces related to passive, which will probably reduce industry opportunity for active. So my question is, do you think that investors have become just too obsessed with flow trends in the interim and maybe putting too much pressure on industry management teams to achieve organic growth against what is a pretty challenging domestic and macro backdrop?
Well, look, no, we have high expectations ourselves for organic growth. And it is a challenging environment. You put it very accurately. And when you have a macro environment like we've, I mean, quite frankly, 2015 and a good part of this, of our fiscal 2016, which has just ended, was a really choppy and turbulent period. And that's why I mentioned in global distribution that, you know, for us, if you think about it, we still had $70 billion in net or in gross sales, and really ended the year sort of flattish in total as it related to net sales. And that's with $9 billion out at Royce. Royce has been a significant headwind, as you know. Now we're feeling better about it. It continues to decrease in terms of the amount of outflow there. But we felt actually pretty good about our overall performance as it relates to the retail business. That said, we are focused, we introduced these smart beta ETFs because we do recognize that investors are moving more towards systematic type investing, ETFs as a vehicle. So we have to adjust and be prepared as clients want to move across the spectrum of investment products and styles and vehicles and things like that. So no, I mean, look, we want to grow. We expect to grow. I think where, and what I've tried to do this morning, and hopefully it's been helpful, is give some color around the institutional side. You know, everybody wants to pinpoint exactly which strategies are out or what the reason is. And there's a multitude. There's as many different reasons that people make changes as there are clients, quite frankly. I mean, it's a rebalancing for this. You know, in a market like we had, it's not unusual. People say, well, institutions don't move things as quickly. And there's a lot of truth to that. But at the same time, they can be a bit tactical. And with the volatility we saw in the first calendar quarter of 16, it's not unusual that people are taking some chips off the table. They're positioning ahead of the Fed or what they think might happen with the Fed. And so that's why, again, we're out 4 in April. I would be cautious. I would be careful not to overreact to that any more than I would overreact to our $4 billion in May. And that's why I tried to give visibility. Our pipeline remains at 10 plus billion, or our unfunded wins, remain at 10 plus billion. We have a very high level of confidence in that number, that $10 billion of institutional business will come in. Then I tried to give a little transparency on this notion of pipeline, because we do see through, and we're in constant dialogue with our affiliates, particularly our larger ones, around wins that they've gotten but haven't contracted yet. And that's what gives me comfort and gives me some confidence, particularly in our larger affiliates like Western, that while there's some outs, there's also ins coming in, and they kind of go back and forth. And overall, it's a good story. I think the retail side of the business in recent, really since the March, the end of February into March and now into April, feels better to us. Again, outflows slowing significantly at Royce, outflows slowing at Clearbridge. a nice pipeline of business institutionally at ClearBridge or unfunded wins at ClearBridge. And then, this month, as I mentioned, about $600 million in our retail fixed income book. So retail business feels better, institutional business a bit lumpy. But no, we take it as what we're supposed to do. We need to grow organically, and we're focused on it.
And we have time for one more question from Michael Carrier from Bank of America.
All right, thanks a lot, guys. Hey, Pete, maybe on the expenses, there's a lot going on, and, you guys mapped it out, pretty well. Just wanted to get a sense, I guess, two things. One is on the core expenses, seems like you're managing that pretty well, just given the backdrop. So just wanted to kind of get the outlook on how much flexibility you have there, just given the volatility we're seeing. And then, based on what you were saying in terms of that comp ratio and, these new affiliates coming on board, just wanted to get an update. Where is the potential, operating margin, with this new mix of business? Meaning, is it still the same range or does that change any, given the revenue shares?
Thanks, Mike, and really good questions. First, I appreciate you saying we lay things out well, and again, we did try to do that on page 9. We recognize noisy quarter last quarter, and we've got a couple more coming with these deals, but they really only impact a couple of lines on the P&L, which is what we've laid out on page 9. That on a go forward basis, you're going to see some stuff in the comp line for severance and related charges. And then we'll see some stuff in real estate and others. So it's actually a simpler story than sometimes it looks based on the absolute amount of the numbers. And then as we look at, and going back to something Craig Ziegenthaler said earlier, we don't disclose just parent level numbers because GAAP doesn't allow us to do that, but we're looking at ways to be able to show you the parent level. Our focus, and we just completed our multi-year planning process, we went through, kind of literally line by line, penny by penny in terms of what we're spending, and we're gonna ratchet down hard and basically keep our costs flat year over year at the corporate and global distribution level, despite adding two new affiliates plus Presidian plus the host of next generation products. So we think, we've said all along, we've got a very scalable business. We think this will be a year for us to be able to show that and prove that with the new affiliates coming on. And then margin, obviously, again, that one's been most heavily impacted by some of the noise, but when you strip it all out, we're kind of running at a 20-21% level right now off of quarters that typically are lower because of the seasonal costs, seasonal comp costs. So if you assume that normalized, relatively normalized level for March is in the 21% range, just coming off the seasonal stuff, we get it in, getting more into 22, 23, and then we'll be adding, hopefully a point or so, a point or two, from these new affiliates. But it's difficult to predict, we're just so heavily impacted by market at any given point in time, it's difficult to give a precise prediction, but I do think, this will be the year that people really see the scalability and the operating leverage we have in the business.
Okay, that's helpful. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. That concludes our question and answer session, and I would now like to turn the floor back over to Mr. Sullivan for closing remarks.
Thank you. And I'd like to thank all of you for joining us this morning. Notwithstanding what has been a very challenging and may continue to be a very challenging and fairly turbulent markets, Legg Mason continues to make very good progress in executing on our very straightforward and our very focused strategy, increasing choice for global investors in investment strategies, products, vehicles, and access. As we bring a challenging year to a close, I would like to give a shout-out to my colleagues at both Legg Mason and our affiliates. I'm very proud of the work you've all done in the service of our global clients, and I thank you. And I look forward to updating you on our continued progress next quarter. And with that, I wish you a good day.
Thank you. That concludes our call. Thank you for your participation, and you may now disconnect your lines at this time.